The first game that Michael came back was against Milwaukee. And Don Nelson, who was very entertaining to sit near on the sidelines, he could just crack you up. I remember in the first half, when Michael was in for the first time, he hit a couple buckets. He was making some passes. And Don comes running over. It's like, you know, I think he's close to that 7 minutes. You better tell the coaching staff about it so they don't get fired. You don't want them to get in trouble. He was probably in the game for like 3 or 4 minutes. And Don was trying to find a way to get him out of there already because he could see that it was Michael Jordan who was out there.
I was on every bus ride, every plane trip, every hotel with that team for 9 months. It was a nice surprise to get in on the end of episode 2 there on that question with Michael. I joke, though, because everyone's asking me and all my friends and Bulls fans are asking me, hey, that was great to see you again 22 years ago. I tell everyone jokingly that I scolded Michael on the bus following that quick interview because he never really answered my question. That was the joke. Although I will tell you, I was probably nervous in all likelihood getting on the bus with Michael following that media scrum because I had to explain to him, sorry, I had to ask you such a difficult question regarding Scottie Pippen and his contract, but it's something that I had to ask.
Then you are in Australia right now.
You're talking NBA basketball. You're talking great teams. You're talking great individual players.
Takes it off and there's number 23. And of course, Johnny goes nuts.
We're all getting goosebumps thinking about it now.
I just tried to go out there and play my game.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Adam. I don't like anybody. I'm not a people person.
Grant, you made the pass. Yes. Christian, can you catch the ball? Yes.
All the stars were aligned and all the muscles fired at the right time. And I was able to get off the ground and throw one down.
I was saving that as a surprise for you.
And now, introducing your host for In All Airness, Adam Ryan.
Welcome to episode 102. Thanks for joining me. Today, a special episode that focuses on select topics covered in episode 2 of the Last Dance docuseries. My first guest is Mark Grossman, the Chicago Bulls head statistician since 1977, a tenure that continues to this day. We then welcome Steve Cashel. For most of the 1990s, Steve was anchor and host of Bulls Basketball on Sports Channel and Fox Sports Net Chicago. He then moved to the role of Bulls radio host for more than 20 years. Mark discusses the creative ways that the Bulls stats team maximized Jordan's playing time in 1986 when MJ had a so-called 7 minute per half restriction as he returned to action, recovering from his broken foot. Steve chats about his key question that is shown towards the end of The Last Dance, episode 2, asking Jordan about his thoughts on Pippen's comments to the Chicago press about wanting to be traded from the Bulls. More generally, Mark and Steve each share great memories from their experiences of being so closely ingrained with the Bulls franchise. Towards the end of the episode, I'll share another great podcast review. If you can spare a moment or two, please add your review via your listening app. It'll be most appreciated. Show notes for this episode and access to a huge archive of past episodes are available at inallairness.com. Now, onto the show. My guest today is head statistician for the Chicago Bulls. He started working with the team in September of 1977. The 10-part docuseries, The Last Dance, a deep dive on the Chicago Bulls 1998 season, is the perfect opportunity to introduce him now. Mark Grossman, thanks for joining me.
Adam, my pleasure.
Great to have you on and look forward to asking you a few questions, particularly about your involvement with the 1998 Bulls. You began your preseason in France at the McDonald's Championship in Paris doing stats for the NBA. Was that just for the Bulls games or all six teams?
The McDonald's games, I think there had been like three or four of them. They were every other year, not during the Olympic years. And the game in Paris, the NBA, who I was working for at the time, I was involved in designing and upgrading their stats system. It was the first computer system that the NBA had actually developed for themselves. And I was with a group of a couple other stat people. And as a result of all the work that we did, this was our reward from the league, was to be able to go to Paris on their dime and work the games. Basically a free trip to Paris, you're not going to turn it down. We worked a load of games. We were working probably from about 10 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night every day. other than that, I could tell you everything about watching basketball games and eating very little because we got done so late and we'd have to go search out restaurants. But we worked the entire tournament. The Bulls only played the last 2 days.
What was it like those last few days, and particularly when the Bulls were playing, the atmosphere in the arena and the reception to Michael Jordan and the cast of the Chicago Bulls?
Oh, when the Bulls showed up anytime, anywhere during that era, it was like a circus. I mean, the fans were going crazy, screaming, yelling. It wasn't only the fans. It was the press that was getting their first chance to cover Michael Jordan live. They were all trying to get to him and get autographs. The players wanted to get pictures and autographs with him. You get used to it after a while. I had seen it since 1991 when we won our first championship. It was like that all the time. Circus atmosphere is probably the best way of putting it.
You mentioned there as well just before that the NBA was just upgrading the stats system. Prior to that, perhaps, was it just being done manually?
We did statistics manually from the time I started. I used to do work in college, which goes back to the early 70s. When I started with the Bulls, everything was manual, 77. In 1987-88, we were, if I'm not mistaken, the third team to go computerized. There was a program that was developed by a person who worked for the Atlanta Hawks, and it became kind of the de facto program for the league until 94, when the system that the league decided to build was implemented, and it was mandated for every team to use that statistics system and have some compatibility across the board. Like I said, when I started, 77, everything manual, just stick figures on a piece of paper. 87, 88, we had our first stat system. Back when Jordan broke his foot, 85, 86, which is what this whole thing is about, we were doing things manually. Minutes, you'd have to calculate manually. Today, when you look at box scores, everything is broken down to minutes and seconds. Back then, we had a set of rules that were in the stat manual as to how you credited minutes to players on the floor. At what point of the minute do you credit it to the guy who's leaving? At what point in the minute do you credit with the guy coming in? So that's why it was a big deal when Michael was on his minute limit to be able to know those rules as well as you could.
And I found it fascinating. I read that you said that whilst you really enjoyed the first two episodes of The Last Dance, you had to disagree with one part of the story, and that was just relating to that initial minutes restriction on Jordan to 7 per half as he sort of recovered from his broken foot. Given that unique experience of working stats for the Bulls at that time, there's possibly no better person to ask than yourself. What plans were put in place to try and give Jordan as many on-court minutes as possible during that time, from your recollection?
I remember when it actually happened and they implemented the 7-minute policy, I remember the coaches coming to us and asking us exactly what the rules were for minutes and if we could make sure to keep them aware of when he was getting close to that 7-minute per half rule. And, you know, we had a conversation, and I actually had to remember who it was. I had to look it up to see who the coaches were, but I remembered Stan Albeck being there. He was the head coach. What I didn't remember was Tex Winter and Mike Tebow were assistant coaches. Tex, I really didn't know that well, other than, you know, to talk every once in a while. But Mike is somebody who I've known for a long time. And back then, he was a very big part of the coaching staff. We had the conversations with them about where the break was within a minute. If a player plays 29 seconds of a minute, he does not get credit for the minute based on the rules back then. So if he left at the 29-second marker before, the minute would go to the player who came in. If he came in at 31 seconds and played to the end of the minute, he did not get credit for the minute. It went to the guy who came out of the game. We discussed that with the coaches, and they were very cognizant of watching the time on the clock. And if necessary, I mean, they were running and calling timeouts at 28 seconds past a minute just to make sure Michael wasn't getting that extra minute that would cost him somewhere later in the game.
It's incredible thinking about it.
The first game that Michael came back was against Milwaukee, and Don Nelson, who was very entertaining to sit near on the sidelines. He could just crack you up. And he was constantly talking to everybody. I remember in the first half, when Michael was in for the first time, he hit a couple buckets. He was making some passes, and Don comes running over. It's like, you know, I think he's close to that 7 minutes. You better tell the coaching staff about it so they don't get fired. You don't want them to get in trouble. He was probably in the game for like 3 or 4 minutes, and Don was trying to find a way to get him out of there already because he could see that it was Michael Jordan who was out there.
That's fantastic. I love hearing this sort of stuff.
For context, Mark provided a few handy stats here that I'll relay now. Jordan had a 14-minute limit, 7 minutes per half, for only 3 games. It then went up week by week. In the Indiana game that they used as an example in episode 2 of The Last Dance, Michael played 28 minutes. If they were in Chicago, Mark said he would have told them that the last 13 seconds would not have added to his total. Maybe they didn't get good info from the Pacer crew. So there's some interesting context there that Mark added after we wrapped up our conversation.
For me, I was very fortunate. I was there from day one. I remember his first game and looking at our official scorer who sits next to me, Bob Rosenberg. The two of us look at each other and goes, oh, you know, this guy isn't that bad. This is kind of exciting to watch him. And just as the years went on, he'd do things that would just amaze you. And then after a while, the amazing things became commonplace. You just expected them. When he left, the 2 years that he was gone, it was like pure depression as far as I was concerned, because I had been so used to it and enjoyed it so much. And all I wanted to do was see him one more time just to, you know, get that closure. The Bulls had a exhibition game in the summer, a charity exhibition game that he played in. And when that was over, I felt, okay, I have my closure. And then, of course, 6 months later, he comes back.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to sit through all of it. I was lucky enough to be a witness to every finals game that they played, home and road. I got the chance to work for NBC doing stats on the table for broadcasts. So that was my ability to go on the road with them. The guy was just, I think back on all those days, the chance to interact with him. And when you were sitting at the table, you interacted with him because Michael was nonstop looking for things, asking about things, making comments, ripping on people. It was fun. I mean, he was definitely a great experience to be by.
This is fantastic to hear. Do you remember any particular instance of something he either said or a reaction to something whilst he was waiting near the bench to check into any game, regardless of the circumstance?
There are lots of things. Michael was a fanatic on defense. And to him, he wanted to be recognized for his defensive prowess too. And one of the things that was big for him was steals. Loved steals. He thought that was the most important thing. And he always wanted to lead the league in steals. So he would always come over and, you know, ask us about, you know, did I get that steal? You know, who'd you give that steal to? To Michael, that was a big thing. And he always was lobbying. Hey, I got my hand on that one. I should be getting credit for it. So as the years went on, maybe you lean over a little bit. Today, couldn't get away with what was done back then because games were never reviewed. You know, you never knew how legitimate some of the stats were. There are stories about stats that are so phony in the league from back in those days, but there was nothing that they wanted to do about it. Today, the league reviews statistics live. They review it post-game. You couldn't get away with changing anyone's statistics so that it wasn't legitimate for the last few years. I mean, that's a very big thing for the league. But back then, maybe Michael got a steal or two that could have gone to somebody else. So when he retired, Scotty figured that he was the guy who should inherit the benefit of the doubt. And he was always, did I get the steal? Did I get the steal? And the second year that Michael had retired, Scotty actually won the steal title. It was a big deal to him. And one game, there's a pass that went into the middle and both Scotty and Michael were going for it and the ball got away and it was picked up by the Bulls. And Michael comes by and goes, who'd you give the steal to? He's just running by and yelling at that. And Scotty goes running by and goes, who'd you give the steal to? Didn't have a chance to answer. Well, the first time there's a stoppage of play, Michael comes over and go, who'd you give the steal to? I said, who do you think I did? And he goes, oh, okay, fine. And Scotty comes by and goes, who'd you give the steal to? I said, well, who'd you think? All of a sudden, he thinks about it for a second. He goes, wait a second. You gave it to Michael. Now that he's back, you're not going to take care of me, are you? It's like, I'm not going to get anything. He's just standing there screaming it, not angry, but just, you know, making a big deal out of it. And Michael finally has to come over and grab him because the ball's in play and they're playing. And he goes, he's messing with you. Just come on.
That's great. Oh, that was definitely worth asking you about that one. I appreciate that. You mentioned Bob Rosenberg there. Whilst your experience goes back to September of 77, he was with the franchise in Chicago since the team's inception, basically. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, Bob has been the team's official scorer since day one. And before that, he was the official scorer for the Zephyrs, today's Washington Wizards. He's done every game, I believe, except for three home games.
Remarkable.
It is. And the three that he missed, one was for a Bears playoff game, and two of them were because he went to Japan with the Cubs.
Wow.
He's had a remarkable run. He was very tight with Michael Jordan. He used to do scrapbooks for Michael, and he did a lot of things with him. Michael and he were, I don't know if close is the word, but Michael certainly spent more time with him than he did with anyone else on the table.
Do you have much memorabilia that is particularly significant?
I'm not a big collector. The only thing that I really have from back then, I have all my passes from the finals.
Mm.
And I have the newspapers for every clinching game. All six championships, I have the newspaper. If I remember right, I've got a few t-shirts from visiting cities where we went to where they had some goofy saying that they were handing out to people, and I saved those.
Yeah.
The things that I like the best are pictures that I find every once in a while where I'm in it and Michael's in it, or some of the players are in it, or it's a full scorers table picture. There's been many of those. An old Sports Illustrated from the year that the Bulls were in Portland for the championship. And on the left side of the page, there's a picture of a game that's going on in Chicago. And I'm in the background of it sitting on the scorer's table. On the right-hand side, there's a picture of game action in Portland, and I'm sitting on the scorer's table in Portland. That, to me, is a great collector's item.
I believe you watched around 60 games in person during the 1998 season, which culminated at the Delta Center in Utah.
Yep.
Courtside working stats for NBC. What do you remember most about the 98 finals, and particularly that final game and the final shot of Michael Jeffrey Jordan?
Well, I could tell you that the atmosphere in Utah was very inhospitable to the Bulls. The fans were brutal. And I know the players really took offense to some of the things that were said to him. So that was one thing that stuck out. The Utah scorers table is four rows or five rows high, and it has press, stat people, TV, radio, their statistics. So we're like right at center court. And if I remember right, I was sitting like in the fourth or fifth row there, and you could hear everything that was being said. And when the series ended, I remember Ron Harper and Dennis Rodman going up to certain fans and pointing at them and telling them to go F themselves.
Wow. I mean, I can imagine the explosion of emotion would get you to do that, I suppose. So that makes sense.
Also remember, there was a woman and her family who sat behind me at the Delta Center. And now I had been there for 2 years. It was three games in the year before, and now three games in 97, 98. And we kind of got to know each other. We talked. She knew that I worked for the Bulls. And as the game is winding down, she's telling me, you know, if I remember right, it was a Sunday. It was a very rare Sunday game in Utah. They don't play Sunday games. And she was telling me how they're very devout Mormons. To them, coming to a game is something that they would never think of, except for the fact that this is the finals and they live and die by the Jazz. You know, please, whatever I do, if the Bulls win, don't go crazy and jump up and down and make them feel bad, because they're very devout and they don't want to say the wrong things. And when Michael hits that last shot, the woman who's telling me how devout she is and everything else, you hear her nice and loud going, "Oh, shit." I turned around and looked at her. It's like, what? And she's like, oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't see that one coming. That's a beauty. Do you remember the reaction that you actually did have yourself and those that were working for the Bulls? Or were you the only Bulls-related person working stats at that time in Utah?
I was the only person on the table there. There were quite a few writers from Chicago, and it's interesting how, you know, we were all communicating with each other to talk about it. The one big thing that last game was Scotty was very badly hurt.
He's back.
A couple of the writers, every time Scotty would go into the locker room, and that probably happened about four or five times during the game, they would run in to try to find out what's happening. And they finally found out that he had severe back problems. Turned out he had multiple herniated discs. He was, I don't want to say ineffective. He played great defense. He rebounded. He just couldn't shoot. He couldn't run very hard. And that was a big point of discussion among all the Chicago people who were sitting on those four levels, basically all together. Everyone was very concerned about, you know, what's going to happen if Scotty can't go anymore? Is the team still going to be able to come through? What if it goes to game seven? Is Scotty going to be able to play? Luckily, we didn't have to find that one out.
True. It was over in six, and John Stockton had a last-second heave that would have won the game.
Right.
Obviously, he missed. The celebrations began. How did you find the reaction of the crowd in general, who obviously would have been overwhelmingly Utah-based?
The crowd was not very hospitable. There was a big Chicago contingent there, and they all stayed around and celebrated. The Bulls brought their entire front office to every series for the finals. So there was always those people who were there. There was a lot of press there from Chicago. There were a lot of fans and celebrities. I remember John Lithgow, who's the actor from Third Rock from the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
He was there, and they showed him on the board some bit where they were showing people from around and cheering on the Jazz. You know, like, go Jazz, go Jazz. And they zoom in on John Lithgow. And as soon as he sees that he's on it, he mouths the words, go Bulls. And the crowd, everyone started booing him.
That's one way to make an impact.
Yeah, that one sticks out. But there were a lot of people from Chicago who had made the trip, that had paid whatever it took to get seats there. It's understandable. I mean, the first year that I went to the finals, I remember telling my wife it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The next year, when I went again, she looked at me and she said, you said last year was a once-in-a-lifetime. I said, yeah, this is once-in-a-lifetime, too, for the second year in a row. You know, I managed to go 6 years. It was worth everything that I could think of, because the memories are still in my mind. I'm not going to forget the things that went on at these places.
Absolutely priceless, and I really appreciate you sharing those stories. Elliot Kelb, Mr. Stats, was he part of the NBC crew there in Utah?
Elliot was the guy I was on headset with directly. So Elliot was what was called talent stat guy. He'd sit with the broadcasters, and I'm the official stat guy. I'm the one that sits with the stat crew and gives the information to the truck as I get the information. Because when referees are like signaling fouls and telling information, they're telling the scorer's table first. So you always want somebody on that side who can then give the information to the truck and give the information to Elliot and the broadcaster. So, yeah, I worked with him for the six championships and a couple of years before that and a couple of years after that. I did some baseball with him, too. He was a fun guy.
I've had Elliot as a guest previously on the show, so I was curious when you said that you were working with NBC if you had anything to do with him. So that's great to hear. Thank you very much, Mark. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
My pleasure.
My guest today in the 1990s hosted Bulls Game Time pregame show on Sports Channel TV with the late, great Norm Van Leer. He also did the halftime and postgame Sports Channel report. Following that, he was Bulls radio host, which included a trip to Paris in October of 1997, as detailed in episode one of the 10-part docuseries The Last Dance. He also features towards the end of episode two of said series. Steve Cashel, thanks for joining me.
Oh, Adam, my pleasure. How are you?
I'm going really well, thanks. And thanks for taking time out of your evening in Chicago to join me on the show. First up, what are your general thoughts on the first two episodes of The Last Dance? The ratings over the last 24 hours have come out to show that it was watched by more than 6 million people, I think, episode one, and then over 5 million for episode two. Just in general, how did you think the first two episodes went in terms of setting the scene for what's ahead for the rest of this series?
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. They were probably different than I was thinking, because this thing was being built up as though total reflection of that final championship season in 1997-98, which was a span of 9 months. You know, we started with the Bulls in October in Paris, France, and wound up in mid-June in Salt Lake City, Utah, with the sixth NBA championship. So I didn't know how they were going to break it apart into 10 episodes. But then we got an inkling that, you know, it was going to be a lot about Michael Jordan and his mom and the letters. And so, but I was surprised how much it was about Michael and Michael from the 80s. Michael Jordan from high school, even in college, playing at North Carolina for Dean Smith. And then they got into the Jerry Krause saga. And then finally in episode two, the Scottie Pippen. And of course, drew in the Phil Jackson interesting sidebar with it being his last season. So it was interesting to me. I loved it. Everyone said the first 2 hours went by very quickly. I was totally into it, reliving so many of those things that I lived in person. It was fascinating, and everyone can't wait now for 3 and 4 next weekend.
Now, you mentioned a moment ago the trip to France there in October of 1997 for the McDonald's Open or McDonald's Championship. What are your memories of traveling with the team and being in France? Obviously, it looked like it was quite a sideshow in terms of off the court with the Bulls and particularly Jordan, I guess, walking around in his full warm-ups and whatnot. But what memories do you have when you think back to that trip to France there, Steve?
Oh, I remember Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman were not with us, so I was interested to see the level of competition. And I remember taking this beautiful airplane that included Michael Jordan's family, a lot of the families of the players, a few media, which were team broadcasters, some of the front office for the Bulls, obviously the coaching staff, but it was probably one of the largest private planes we've ever been on, with a 7-hour trip from Chicago to Paris, France. And we left around midnight, got in around sometime in the afternoon with the time difference. We immediately got off the plane, and Phil Jackson wanted players to go and do a little shoot arounds and practice. So we immediately went to a practice. That was the idea. Don't let those guys go to bed, but get out there. And it was amazing. Everywhere we went, remember we stayed, I believe, at the Intercontinental Hotel, team hotel, and there was a ton of security, but the people of Paris, France were crazy to see Michael Jordan. I mean, the poor guy couldn't get out of his hotel room. They had a lot of events planned for Michael, but the games were a lot of fun. We got a lot of sightseeing in, and the players were able to take some pictures in front of the Eiffel Tower and things, but everything had to be scheduled with very intense security. But I think Michael really enjoyed it. It was about a week-long trip. We got out at night to enjoy some of the nightlife. The games were fun, and the players took the game seriously. We saw some interesting competition, but they were there to see Michael, and playing without Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman, the team played very well, and they won the championship. And I think that was the goal, especially for considering it was preseason.
Though you appear in various media scrums that are shown from those championship years, were you aware that you were going to be featured towards the end of episode 2 of The Last Dance?
No, I had no idea. I remember the film crew being with us on a lot of the plane trips. I was on every bus ride, every plane trip, every hotel with that team for 9 months. And I remember the film crew, and I knew they kept these films kind of under wraps for 20 years. And I guess we're learning now that Michael Jordan had to give his approval on it, but it was between NBA Entertainment, Michael's group, and ESPN, obviously, and the NBA, but they all came to terms and decided to show this now. But I had no idea what was going to be edited in, edited out. I knew they were there, so it was a nice surprise to get in on the end of episode 2 there on that question with Michael. I joked, though, because everyone's asking me, and all my friends and different people, fans, Bulls fans are asking me, hey, that was great to see you again 22 years ago. I tell everyone jokingly that I scolded Michael on the bus following that quick interview because he never really answered my question. That was the joke. Although I will tell you, I was probably nervous in all likelihood getting on the bus with Michael following that media scrum because I had to explain to him, sorry, I had to ask you such a difficult question regarding Scottie Pippen and his contract. But it's something that I had to ask. And I know one of the media people here in Chicago today said that I asked a good question, one that needed to be asked to Michael at that time.
just for the context of the conversation here, you said to him, Scotty made some earth-shattering comments last night to Chicago writers about wanting to be traded, and what are your thoughts on that? And then Jordan thinks about it for a second and replied, I don't really have any right now. But that actually almost closes episode 2 of the series. It also sets the scene for episode 3 because Pippen has all but demanded his way out of town. He's rehabbing still from his surgery that he put off for summer so that he could actually just enjoy his summer, as he said in episode 2. A very important question, and I'm glad that you did ask it all those years on. Speaking of Pippen, the relationship or the lack thereof between Pippen and the Bulls GM Jerry Krause, as you even alluded to a little while ago, was nothing short of jarring by the time that episode 2 came to an end. His future in Chicago was obviously looking very uncertain, and the divide between him, Krause, and all the other players basically on the team was enormous. How was it for you to be there at the time in terms of the team harmony? And you were traveling with the team, as you said, throughout that 1997-98 season. What did you make of the chemistry between the team, either on court during practices or games, and actually when they're traveling?
Yeah, Adam, good question. You know, it was a team that was strung together. I think they were all pulling for each other. They knew how difficult that third championship would be. I never saw any drama, to tell you the truth. And I took notes. I went back to my room and spoke into a tape recorder. You know, I was preparing to write a book, although I was such a longtime Bulls employee that I've held off till now. I've got some stories that may never be told. To tell you the truth, there was never any drama. I remember one time, I'll share a quick story, Dennis Rodman, we flew into New Jersey to play the New Jersey Nets, and we always got to the hotel maybe around 6-7 o'clock at night, and we had that night off, of course, played the next night, woke up in the morning, and would have a shoot-around. Back then, it was the Continental Airlines Arena, and Dennis wasn't there. You know, he didn't get on the bus for the shoot-around, and Phil Jackson said, hey, go wake up Dennis, maybe he's sleeping. He slept in, and I think one of the assistant trainers or security guys ran up, and they said, Dennis is in his room. So Phil said, all right, first plane ride back to Chicago, send him on it. We're going to play without him tonight. I guess Dennis supposedly went to Jersey City to do some gambling and never came back to the hotel that night.
Wow.
So interesting story. But that was, I bring that up, Adam, because that was the only time I ever saw any mischief from Dennis Rodman. He was, I thought, a perfect citizen, so to speak. And he's very introverted. You know, he didn't associate a lot with his teammates, but he never caused a problem. I never saw any drama. You bring up Jerry Krause. He didn't travel with us a lot, but when he was there, he kind of hung to himself. I remember one incident when Scotty and Michael gave him kind of a hard time on the plane as he walked back there, which is a story in itself. Again, the guys pulled for each other. There was very little, if any, drama ever on the plane, on the bus. Everyone had their seat where they went. Michael sat in the same seat on the bus and on the plane every time, and he sat with Rod Harper and Scott Burrell and Scottie Pippen. They played cards, had a couple beers after the game and some chips. You know, that was their standard thing. Maybe eat a little food, but it was a quiet bunch for the most part. Nice guys, though. Luke Longley, Steve Kerr, Bill Wennington, Tony Kukoc, Dennis, you know, they were, and Scotty, Michael, they were great, great guys, especially to me. So I thought it was a really nice experience, and maybe that should be shared more, because it was a group that played for each other and very little drama, and I experienced it all.
You mentioned there how you would go back to your hotel room and speaking to a recorder, and there's a possibility of doing a book. Is that something that might actually happen one day, do you think, or where does that sort of sit at the moment with what you're planning to do?
Yeah, good question, Adam. I was approached twice in the first 5-10 years to write a book about my experiences traveling with that 97-98 final championship team. I turned them both down because I was a Bulls employee and I was a Bulls radio host, first TV host, then radio host. And up until this past year, I had that job. I've got two boys who are 15 and 13 now. They play high-level sports, and I was always missing a lot of their games, so I decided not to do the Bulls this year. As their radio host, I stepped away. I have another full-time job. I still have two of the broadcast jobs that I do here in Chicago. I've been approached, and I didn't want to do that because I thought, I don't want the Bulls to ever be mad at me for, you know, maybe letting out some secrets or telling some stories that shouldn't be told while I'm a Bulls employee. So I still have all of that. And I've got all the aliases that they use, you know, all the room lists. I mean, I collected everything.
Wow.
And great stories. And, you know, Phil Jackson, Dennis Rodman. We go into Tiger Woods and Michael. I've got some Tiger Woods stories. I've got stories about Phil Jackson and Tex Winter. I've got Dennis Rodman with Eddie Vedder, who used to travel with us, and not on the team plane, but Eddie Vedder was close to the Dennis, and Eddie used to show up quite often. Dennis was dating Carmen Electra at the time, so Carmen and Eddie would fly to a lot of cities that we were staying in with the Bulls and meet Dennis. So I've got a trove of of stories that I'm keeping under wraps for now, but I might tell that story, and when's it going to be too late? So I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it, if anything, but some of these stories should be told, because even though they're doing this great 10-part series, I guarantee you there's going to be some things that I have that aren't in that series.
That's a wonderful tease, I must say. That's really good to hear some of the stuff you've got there. And as a massive Pearl Jam fan myself, it's great to hear that Eddie was involved as well. Great to hear these memories, Steve. Thanks so much for sharing. Is there anything we haven't covered about The Last Dance that might spring to mind that you'd like to talk about?
No, today, actually, they had Jason Hare, the main producer of The Last Dance, on one of the local sports radio stations here in Chicago, and it was quite interesting. They have him on every Monday following the airing of The Last Dance, and he gave us a little preview of what to expect in episodes 3 and 4. And I think it's going to delve into a lot of Dennis Rodman, you know, finish the kind of the Scotty story with his contract as they left us after episode 2, but I think it's going to be a lot about Dennis, and that's going to be interesting, and probably more about Jerry Krause and Phil Jackson. So it's very interesting how they weave these different storylines together. There's so much to tell, but I think the guys at ESPN have done a marvelous job.
The way that they go back and forwards as well in time, it's not just chronological. I think that really helps keep everybody's interest peaked, because you're not sure where they're going to next and what moment they might focus on or what particular games they might mention. So I think they've done a fantastic job thus far, and I'm really excited for what's to come with the rest of the series. Thanks again for taking the time out to chat with me about this, and until we have a chance to maybe do this in more of a long form, thanks for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it.
I look forward to our next meeting, and thanks so much. Great to have Bulls fans in Australia, and especially you, and to share that with the Australian folks is quite a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. I welcome your interaction with the show. You can suggest topics or guests you want to hear conversations with. Send me an email. Audio clips are welcome. inallairness@gmail.com. Time now to share another great review from a fan of the show. Thanks this time to Nails the Dog. Pretty sure that's not his real name. Via Apple Podcasts Australia. It's titled Awesome Look Back on 80s and 90s NBA. And it reads, great guests with awesome insights on the game's best all-time player, Michael Jordan. Heaps of tidbits. Thanks very much, Nails. It's a 5-star review too. Much appreciated, mate. Worldwide, the show now has 142 ratings on Apple Podcasts with an average of 4.5 stars, with 85 reviews across all providers. Thanks for your continued support. If you add a review, I'd love to read it out on a future episode. Your ratings and reviews are one of the best ways to support the podcast. If you enjoy the show, please do tell your basketball-loving friends about it. Your word-of-mouth recommendations are definitely worth their weight in gold. Stay up to date with my podcast and subscribe to my monthly email newsletter. You'll receive exclusive details on upcoming podcast episodes, future high-profile guests to appear on the show, and plenty more. Simply email me inallairness@gmail.com. You can subscribe to my show in various ways. Search for In All Airness, 3 words, on your podcast app of choice. The show is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Android, and more. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show, and share my web address with your friends and colleagues, inallairness.com. Check out the podcast archive for plenty more episodes with high-profile guests. Follow me on Twitter @inallairness. Please add your like to the show's social hub, facebook.com/inallairness. Join me next time for another edition of the show.